This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Kirsten Diprose.
As we gear up for a big, exciting weekend of sport, we're also likely to be faced by a flurry of gambling ads. The long-awaited gambling reform legislation landed in federal parliament this week, not so much as a bang, but more of a whimper. MPs on all sides of politics say the changes don't go far enough, especially when it comes to protection for kids. So where does this leave the bill? We'll be joined by Reverend Tim Costello, who's been campaigning against gambling harm for decades, shortly. And yesterday, we spoke about the social clock and the pressures of meeting life's many milestones, the driver's license, buying a house, all of those pressures that mount in the first half of our lives. Today, I want you to talk to me about being 60. It seems like a pretty good age to me. You probably moved through a lot of those milestones. And while it's not without its pressures, I want you to tell me about what 60 has looked like for you. Because later in our program, you'll meet Judy Brewer, who started a care farm on her 60th birthday. So what did you do on your 60th? And what has 60 looked like for you? Also, we'll check in on the soccer this hour. Soccer fans, I want to know what your game strategy is. Are you pulling an all-nighter, staying up until 4 a.m., or are you getting up early? How are you going to plan your life around the World Cup? And if that wasn't enough excitement, Taylor Swift's wedding might be happening just after that Socceroos match. There's strong speculation that this long-awaited top secret event will be happening in New York this weekend.
This is The Conversation Hour with Kirsten Diprose.
And it's been great being here with you this week. I'll be back with you again next week. I'm filling in for Mary Guerin. Is it a classic case of trying to please everyone so you please no one? Labor's gambling ad legislation has gone through federal parliament, kind of underwhelmed federal parliament, with the coalition, Greens and crossbenchers calling for the government to go further. It's been 3 years this week since the Murphy Report recommended a full ban on online gambling ads. And it's worth remembering how that report begins. Let me read it to you. Australians spend the most in the world per capita on legal forms of gambling, losing $25 billion every year. Australians also lose the most money to online gambling per capita in the world. And this is the first case study in that report. I lost millions of dollars in online gambling. As a result of that, I am banned from the profession that I love. I'm bankrupt. I'm in jail awaiting sentencing. I'm unable to provide financial security to my family. And importantly, so many people have suffered, and that has been my deep shame. I can't see how that won't be my deep shame for the rest of my life. Reverend Tim Costello has been a longtime campaigner against the harm caused by gambling and chief advocate for the Alliance for Gambling Reform. Tim, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
This legislation has been so long awaited. What's your reaction to where it's landed?
Well, it was always a half measure and very timid. And curiously, striking a balance, and it's an interesting word, between protecting children and, the Prime Minister says, an Australian's right to have a punt, as if we were banning gambling. The Murphy Report was only recommending banning gambling ads, which European nations have done. Europeans all still gamble or are free to gamble. And striking a balance somehow between protecting children and delinking sport and giving free-to-air TV a continued stream from gambling ads. Now, look, free-to-air TV certainly has structural problems, but to put its structural problems, where they're losing out to streaming, ahead of what Peter Murphy recommended and a multi-partisan committee, a ban on all gambling ads, is really ludicrous.
You mentioned getting the balance right, which is a phrase politicians often use. Does the legislation, though, reflect public sentiment? Because that's what's really important.
No, it doesn't. That's what's quite striking in this whole debate. So the latest survey out this week shows 79% of the public want what Peter Murphy and the committee recommended, a total ban on gambling ads. And the figures that you quoted in the Murphy report were Australians losing $25 billion a year. That has gone up in the 3 years since the Murphy. $36 billion a year. The addiction, the suicides, the domestic violence, sometimes more domestic violence, there's people in a family, the crime, the kids going hungry, are reflected in the increase from $25 billion to $36 billion now in losses. So public opinion is made up. It's not the public that has any confidence in these measures or this so-called balance.
Reverend Tim Costello is with us. And Tim, your line's a little bit, it's breaking up sometimes, so I'm not sure if you can move somewhere
that might be slightly better. Is that better then?
I think so. We'll keep on going. Tim, the Australia Institute shows that they recently put out a report that's saying since the Murphy report was released, more than $100 billion in gambling had been lost by Australians. It's a slow process, this reform, and now it looks like this bill has been referred to a Senate inquiry, which is due to report by August. How frustrated do you get by the length of time this sort of change can take?
Well, I always ask myself, why is it so hard to do the... Why are obvious public health measures, and that's what this gambling reform is, because gambling is one of our top public issues, having the greatest harm in the world because we have the greatest losses per capita. Why is it so hard? Look, I've been arguing for gambling reform for 30 years, and I remember when my kids were young adults, the mum saying to me over dinner, "Dad, is there any campaign you've ever won?" I even realised my kids thought I was a loser. So it's been a long, long time coming. And we've won public opinion. We know that what works. We've had Productivity Commission inquiries into gambling. We've known the answer for a long time. But the real story has been the power of the vested interests, the sports betting companies, free-to-air TV saying you can't hurt us, and the AFL and NRL. Those three big gorillas are literally blocking what is overwhelming public opinion. Even AFL fan survey, 78% of AFL fans said we want the gambling ads banned. There's no support for it in the public anywhere, but the power of the vested interests has continued to block reform.
Quite a few text messages. This one, if it's true that 79% of the population wants to ban advertising gambling, then what is the motive of the government in not doing so?
The motive of the government is really, and I should say when I say the government, the Prime Minister mainly. There's a lot of members of caucus, friends of Peter Murphy, quietly telling me they really do want the Murphy recommendations of banning gambling ads. But the motivation of the Prime Minister, I think, is this. It is you don't take on the free-to-air media. They can punish you when it comes to election time. I think the Prime Minister sort of, you know, has, because he loves his Rabbitohs, a cultural view that a beer at the footy and people like to have a punt and we don't want a nanny state. And Peter Vlandis, the head of the National Rugby League, always says it would be a nanny state to ban gambling ads. Mind you, that's Peter Vlandis taking over $100 million in taxpayers' money for the NRL. He doesn't worry about the nanny state there. So I think culturally with the Prime Minister and the fear of taking on free-to-air TV, maybe getting the AFL and the NRL upset, I think that's probably the reasons.
I mean, we do love our sport in Australia, and, you know, people do love to have a punt. I don't think the Prime Minister is out of step there. There is a world, perhaps, though, that could exist where both can be true, where there's... What does that world look like?
Well, that world looks like Spain and Belgium and many other European nations where they banned gambling ads. People are totally free still to have a punt. This is where I'm criticising the Prime Minister, not disagreeing that people like to have a punt. I've never been a prohibitionist. But like we said, we haven't banned smoking, but as a legal adult product, we're not going to let tobacco sponsor sport. And it once did. Once kids knew, you know, the difference between Marlboro cigarettes and Peter Stuyvesant and the cost because tobacco sponsored sport. We said, no, that's wrong. It's equally wrong when an adult legal product, gambling, people have a right to have a punt. Now 80% of 10-year-olds in Australia know the odds. No, there's different sports betting companies, have a preferred sports betting company. Now kids and young men, we're seeing the effect of this, cannot think of watching sport without a multi. That is completely irresponsible. Other nations in the world do not do that. That's why we have the greatest gambling losses. We have had failed public policy to allow this.
Tim, what do you think is going to happen between now and August when the Senate is going to be looking at that legislation? What will you be pushing for? Or, you know, there seems to be a lot of different avenues you could go to with Greens, the Coalition and crossbenchers, perhaps all being on your side in this one.
Yeah, look, the Prime Minister, the government can put it through the lower house. They've got the numbers, which they've done. But they need 10 votes in the Senate. If the Coalition had just waved it through, it would be legislated. So reducing gambling ads to 3 an hour on free-to-air TV, as if we'd accept three ads an hour of cigarette ads and say, job done. But the Coalition didn't wave it through, and that is to their credit. And they pointed out that under this legislation, we may end up with more gambling ads, despite what the Prime Minister is saying. Why? Because you can have gambling ads in sporting breaks, in quarter time. You can have a free-for-all, which is actually even worse in the detail of this legislation. So we think going to an inquiry over the next 8 weeks is really good. And I'd encourage listeners to make a submission. Let the Senate know who are doing the inquiry what you think about these gambling ads, because at the moment this legislation doesn't fix protecting kids and certainly delinking sport and gambling.
Reverend Tim Costello, thank you so much for joining us.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
Chief Advocate for the Alliance for Gambling Reform.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Kirsten Diprose.
Live blogs have popped up everywhere online. There's all a flurry. Let's go to New York, where Kurt Hall is a Reuters video journalist. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, Kirsten. How's it going?
I'm well. What's the latest with the Taylor Swift wedding? Do we know when and where it's going to happen?
Well, you know, Reuters cannot confirm, but Page Six, which is part of the New York Post here, they are saying that they have been married. Her and Travis Kelce, they say, I have already been married, or married earlier today at a small ceremony with close intimate thing with friends and close family, or, you know. But after that, they've now come to Madison Square Garden, where I've been camped out since 7 a.m. It's now past 9 p.m. here. So I've been camped out all day here. And we saw all these cars pulling in. It's really hard to kind of see celebrities coming in. We didn't get to see Taylor Swift herself, but we did see a car, which they say is hers. We can't confirm it was her car. But they're in there. And we're outside waiting for people to start coming out.
So how far off do you think the wedding could be? I was reading that it could be around 7 a.m. Australian time on Saturday morning, which, you know, that's only 20 hours away or less than. I can't do math, so less than 20 hours away.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm not sure what time 7 a.m. would be there. But, no, so everyone, you know, there's a small group here tonight that's in there. They're saying about 100 people. Again, we can't confirm all of that because we can't see exactly, you know, what's going in, who's walking through. And, of course, we are outside Madison Square Garden and they are inside. But tomorrow there's going to be another event that should be about 1,000 people or more. And so that's going to start around, there's arrivals around 4 p.m. New York time. Yeah. And then with the event starting around 6 p.m. And again, that's all kind of just rumors. That's what we're hearing. That's what, you know, everyone is being told. But it's really hard to nail anything down and really confirm it.
Kurt Hall is with us, a Reuters video journalist in New York, on the ground where it's all happening. What tipped you off that the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce wedding was going to be happening this weekend?
Yeah, no, there was just, we just started hearing reports, and also there's a lot of, like, her plane had been doing some weird things. Her plane had been stopping at different places, and there's just, you know, the rumblings started coming. And as soon as we, you know, found out that, hey, this really sounds like this is happening today, we just, you know, packed everything up and we got here straight early in the morning this morning to be here and kind of, you know, suss it out once we got here. Because all, you know, the past couple of days, we've, you know, been hearing different rumors that this is going to be happening. But, you know, no one was sure, is this really happening? Is this a decoy? You know, are they really going to come here? Because it does seem weird to get married at Madison Square Garden, you know, which is normally reserved for, you know, concerts and sporting events. But yeah, so, but I mean, it would, so, you know, but they're going to have possibly performances tomorrow night as well. You can hear traffic out here, I'm sure. So for that kind of thing, for this big event, it is a good place, you know, maybe not for the actual wedding, but to get all these people together, more than 1,000 people expected at tomorrow's event.
Wow, it's going to be big. Is traffic a nightmare then? Is there a problem there?
No. I mean, yeah, we're kind of, I'm on 33rd Street, just, you know, adjacent to the Madison Square Garden, which has really been kind of closed off to most traffic. 31st is also closed off, but there's some traffic coming through and it's kind of, yeah, it's very chaotic. There are police barriers all over. You can't even walk up 33rd or 31st Street, totally blocked off by police barriers. And they've kind of moved us throughout the day. We were closer and they kind of slowly moved us further and further away. All the media.
Well, Kurt Hall, thank you so much for that update. We'll let you get back on to following where Taylor might be.
Thanks, Kirsten. Yeah, more tomorrow.
Kurt Hall there, Reuters video journalist in New York. We'll keep across what's happening with that wedding if anything else happens during our program. You're listening to ABC The Conversation Hour. Kirsten Diprose here with you. I know Taylor Swift might not be everyone's cup of tea, but surely we can get you excited about the soccer. Ned Hall is ABC sports reporter. Hi, Ned.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks. Croatia and Portugal has just wrapped. What's happened?
It was absolutely crazy, the end of that match. And so Portugal has beaten Croatia by 2-1. They came from a goal down. Second half was an incredible half of football. Croatia came from a goal down. Cristiano Ronaldo scored a penalty. It's his first goal he's ever scored in a knockout stage at a World Cup. It's his sixth World Cup. He scored in every one of them, never in the knockout stage. And then Portugal in the 94th minute took the lead with a headed goal. Then there was about 10-11 minutes of stoppage time. Croatia got the ball in the back of the net, but again, VAR looked at it and the player who passed the ball in at the last touch was adjudged to be offside. Now, we've gone back and looked at this multiple times. It was the smallest touch from one of the Croatian players on the way through to the attacking player that was ruled offside. They now use Snicko technology in the balls at the World Cup, like we see at the cricket, and there was the smallest little spike on the ball. Literally, looking at the naked eye, you would not be able to say one way or the other if he touched the ball. And so Croatian fans were very unhappy. There were a lot of bottles thrown on the pitch at the end of the match. And this was, as I say, 12-14 minutes of additional time at the end of the 90 minutes. But final whistle goes, Portugal go through, they play Spain in the round of 16, and Croatia go home.
Oh, wow, what a cracker of a game. That's what it's like, though, at this point with the World Cup. We get to those big upsets and those big games. Ooh, what's also happening today? Any other games?
Yes, yeah, so earlier on, we saw Spain win against Austria. That was a little bit more emphatic and a bit more decisive. A 3-0 win for Spain. Who were my pre-tournament tip? Wasn't overly happy with that from the group stage. I didn't think they played particularly well during that group stage. They really stepped it up this morning against Austria. Won by 3 goals, had a goal disallowed, could have been more than that. They created loads of chances. They are finally living up to their billing as one of the favourites of the tournament. They're a different side from France, who've probably been the best side we've seen so far. Very dynamic, aggressive attacking team. Spain passed the ball beautifully, great movement, a joy to watch in a different way to France. And they're scheduled to meet them in the semi-finals if they go through their matches between now and then. That'll be a huge match. But next for Spain, they will play Portugal. That's an enormous match, the Iberian Peninsula clash between Portugal and Spain coming up in the round of 16. So the games, particularly in the round of 16, all look like they're going to be absolutely enormous just in terms of the teams that are getting through to that stage.
Ned Hall is with us, ABC sports reporter, and we've been asking, what's your game strategy for the Socceroos versus Egypt match? Are you going to pull an all-nighter and go to one of those pubs that are open across Victoria, or are you going to get up nice and early? Ned, what's your strategy?
I'd love to be going and watching it in the pub, but unfortunately I've got to work, so it'll be part of my job tomorrow, so I'll be in work nice and early at South Bank, and a fair bit to do after that as well. But I've got into, this has been the good thing, I've been getting into this early habit of getting up early in the morning and making my way in to watch the matches one after the other, so looking forward to it. And it's just great to see the Socceroos being on as the early match tomorrow, because I'll be bolting out of bed early in the morning.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I've promised my two boys, who are sports obsessed, that I will get up with them at 4 a.m. and we will watch it. Who's the favourite?
I've actually just looked at this. I think Egypt start as slight favourites for the match. Egypt are slightly higher ranked than Australia. They've got a few Premier League players in their ranks, obviously Mo Salah, but Omar Mamouche as well, plays for Manchester City. So they've probably got a few more headline acts in their team. But I wasn't all that impressed with them in their last group stage match against Iran. I thought they were a bit underwhelming there. So I think Australia are in a real chance of getting through here. The bookies' odds aren't massively in favour of Egypt, by the way. So I think they're thinking it's going to be a fairly tight contest and won't be a lot in it at all. So I think Australia are a good chance of going through. Egypt have never won a match at the World Cup before this tournament. They beat New Zealand in the group stage, their first ever win. So they've never been to the knockout stage, and Australia's never won a knockout match. So we're going to see new ground broken from whichever side gets through from this match.
And do we have to win this match to get to the next round?
Yep, this is it from now on. It's sudden death at this stage. So 90 minutes, extra time, penalty shootouts, everything's on the table to try and decide the tie against Egypt. So it could go all the way down to that tomorrow. All those options are on the table for Australia.
Oh, I'm excited and nervous. So 4 a.m. tomorrow morning, 4 a.m. Got to get up for it. Ned Hall, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Cheers.
Ned Hall there, ABC sports reporter. We just heard Croatia and Portugal was an astounding match by the sounds of it there. You're listening to ABC Conversation Hour here on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. Coming up, what did 60 look like for you? How did you mark your 60th birthday, and where were you at in life? Did it surprise you? Did you shake things up?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Kirsten Diprose.
Eric in Warragul says, it will be really funny if this whole Madison Square Gardens thing is really a decoy. Yes, who would know? We will keep across it. Yesterday, we spoke about life milestones or the social clock, essentially the pressures we might feel to do things in life at the so-called right time, whether that's buying a home, having kids, or forging a career. When you turn 60, you might feel as though you're past many of those social markers. So I'm asking you today, what did life look like for you at 60? 1300 222 774 is our number, or of course you can text in as well. Our next guest is Judy Brewer AO, who on her 60th held a joint birthday party and opening of her new care farm in Mudgeegonga in the state's northeast. After a long career in education and various advocacy roles, especially for people with autism and neurodiverse families, Judy took up a new project and career at 60. Judy Brewer, welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Hello, Kirsten.
Now, I'll get you to explain what a care farm is in a moment, but first I want you to take me back to what life was like in your late 50s before you decided to make this big shift.
Well, it was a funny time of life. You know, I think 60, I still don't really believe I'm 60. Well, 61, nearly 62. So it sort of does my head in some days because you wake up and you think you're still, you know, 20 or 30. And then you're like, no, I'm 60. Oh, gosh, you know, how do you deal with that? But in fact, it's been a really wonderful time in my life, despite my 50s being difficult because my husband was diagnosed with a terminal illness when I was 55. We'd been through a lot of, he'd had a couple of cancer bouts, and then this one we knew would be the one he wouldn't beat. And my, you know, our kids had grown up and left home and gone their own way, and we were on a farm.
For context, Judy, sorry to interrupt, but husband was Tim Fisher, who, of course, many will know. But in terms of what that would have meant for you and your career, I imagine a lot of travelling to Canberra and, you know, being the wife of a politician.
Well, I suppose the real thing it meant was that for, you know, 30 years that we were partners in life, you know, we were sharing our lives, and I had to put a lot of things on hold and didn't really have choices that I now have, being living on my own as a, you know, older lady. And, you know, it's been quite scary in a lot of ways, but also very liberating. I miss my beautiful husband, you know, every day, and you know, I wish it had been different, but you've got to deal with cards you're dealt, and that was what we were dealt, and he dealt with it very bravely to the end, and he encouraged me to not just, you know, give up the ghost and move into the flat in town or whatever people thought I would do, but keep living large as he did, and find a new passion. So that's what I did. I found a new passion.
A couple of text messages before we go on with your story. Annie says, I turn 60 in September and plan on a delayed birthday celebration by hiking the Overland Track next autumn with four of my children and a few close friends. Oh, that's cool. Another one says, hi, Kirsten, just turned 66. After COVID, I travelled to the UK, played cricket for a couple of clubs I played with in the late 70s and early 80s, got a job with a pharmacy delivering medication and food supplements to care homes throughout England and Wales. So that lasted 3 years, and now I'm back in Melbourne working full-time and just signed up to begin a career in lawn bowls after 50 years in the world of cricket, says Ian. How cool is that?
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, we all have our own different passions, and I think it's fascinating when you talk to people, and you know, what spins my wheels doesn't spin theirs, and I'm not sure that you know, what I'm doing would be everyone's choice either, but it's definitely my choice, and you know, digging deep to like, what are the things you really want to do with the years you've got left. And you know, for me it was being with people, a diverse range of people, living on the farm, being with my animals, helping in the environment, being in nature. You know, it was like, how do I find something that brings all that together that's actually a business of sorts, and that keeps me getting up in the morning?
So, Judy, explain what a care farm is. So this was a farm that you already had, but you've transformed it in quite a way and turned it into something that's probably quite a new thing in Australia.
Absolutely new thing, and I really didn't know such a thing existed, and yet not a new thing in world, because really we've always understood the power of nature with health and mental health, and you know, this goes back centuries of people being on farms when they need some time out, or connecting with nature when they just need to slow down a little bit, and yet in Europe particularly, I found as I started to do my research that this was not only a thing, it was a government supported thing. It was in the health system. You know, in the UK they have social prescriptions where you know, when people come in, and not everywhere, but some areas have a thing where, you know, people come in with mental health issues, they talk through what might be something we can do before you start going on to, you know, medication for the rest of your life, you know, and we connect you with people that, you know, a place you might want to go for a walk or to, you know, be able to get out of the city or whatever it might be. They call them social prescriptions. In the Netherlands, in Ireland, in other places, government has whole sections that look at using farms as a way of, through the health system, to be integrated as another way for people to just have some downtime and get out there. I think, you know, Australia, we think we're a very rural country and that we know our whole cultural thing around, you know, dare I say Paul Hogan, I better not go there, but... well, you know, that whole wear the hat, you know, be out. But people don't have access to rural Australia. They live in cities. And the disconnect is more than ever in my life, where people come to our farm now who have never been to a farm. They've never seen a chook lay an egg. They've never patted a horse. Not just kids, I'm talking adults, just haven't had experiences that can be so profoundly calming. So care farming is a thing. It's a thing. Australia's been very slow to catch on. Government's not very interested. Health system just doesn't cope with innovation very quickly. So I've tried to sort of forge a way through, and there's some others around doing the same sort of thing, but it's not an easy pathway.
Judy Brewer is with us. She farms in Mudgeegonga and on her 60th birthday opened up a care farm for a big career change. Let's go to some of the calls, Judy, and please stay with us. Ian is on the line and he texted in about his new career in lawn bowls. Hi, Ian. Have I got you there? Oh, I think you might be on the road. Oh, there you go. Hi, Ian.
Oh. Is that me?
It is you. You're talking to Kirsten.
No, I'm not in the lawn bowl. Sorry.
Oh, you're not the lawn bowls. Righto.
No, I can't hear her though, with me phone. I can't hear you. Sorry. Sorry, hang on. 2 seconds.
I'm not in the lawn bowls.
But what's your name?
My 60th today.
Oh, you must be Andy.
No, Ian.
Ian? All right.
No, it's Ian.
Okay, so, brilliant. Yeah. Tell me about your 60th.
Yeah, so today we spent last night at the Grampians, and then today we're working our way down to Ballarat to spend some time with the grandkids.
Ah, well, happy birthday. Yeah. And how are you feeling about turning 60?
Oh, shit.
Emotional.
Yes. It's a big one, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Why are you emotional?
Oh, don't feel that old. Don't feel old at all.
You're not old.
Coming up, he's got a new hip to come up to be replaced in a couple of weeks. So I think
that's not even a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it's all happening. You know, you don't feel that old, and suddenly next thing, bang, you're there. So yeah.
Any big projects on the horizon?
No, just work. So 5 years ago, I had a pretty big career change. Left the car industry and went into local government.
Oh, wow.
And just that's absolutely great. Love it.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. I'm so happy for you. And thank you for joining us on your birthday. Have a great day.
You.
Enjoy the Grampians. It's a beautiful part of the world. It's where I live, so I love it very much.
Yeah.
Yep, it's lovely up there.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's right. It will be a bit wet, a bit muddy, but that's okay. That's how it rolls. Judy is with us, who celebrated her 60th by opening a care farm. Judy, it's wonderful to hear people's stories at, you know, that change in life. And it sounds like it kind of starts to happen in your late 50s. What do you think it is about that time in your life for many people that maybe opens up new doors?
Absolutely. Well, for me, it did too. You know, it was late 50s when I started. I think till then you're just so busy. You know, you're building your careers, you've got your kids or whatever it may be, or, you know, things just seem to, you have to, there's so many things you have to do. And for me, as I said, it was very much about choices. And, you know, sometimes you it's not a financial situation. You've got to find, you know, like this is one of the most difficult things. Do you have to keep working? Do you, you know, most of us do. I've always had off-farm work as well as on-farm work. So you're juggling a whole lot of things, but in the end, you're thinking, but my body might be slowing down a little bit. I don't want my brain to slow down. What's something that's going to keep me active? You know, we keep getting told that as you get older, you've got to move more. Well, I'm not a gym person. I live out on a farm, but I'm more active now than I've ever been in my life, and I'm fitter than I've ever been in my life, you know. So, you know, finding a way you can keep walking, you can keep being outside, that you're not, you know, that oh, I was thinking about Ian. Happy birthday, Ian. You know, I just want to say it's a good time of life. Sometimes you've got to make it a good time of life. It's not going to just happen. Otherwise, you'll just start to slow down, and no one wants to do that. Life's too short.
Let's go to Andy in Malmesbury, who's called in. Hi, Andy.
Hi there.
What did you want to say?
I just wanted to say I had a fabulous time when I turned 60. Still working, self-employed in the field of folk and acoustic music and instrument making. So I had basically a small festival in Malmesbury that day, and it's nearly 10 years on and I'm still doing the same stuff. So feeling old and, feeling old and retiring is not part of the story.
Well, it sounds like you've got a passion with your music.
Yeah, I'm so lucky. Gratitude for it all, and have, you know, a beautiful daughter turning 18 next week and a loving partner who lets me be who I am. And a place in the world of music with lots of music camps and lots of teaching and lovely people to teach. And on the day of the party, we had more than 100 people at home in a garden party, except that a huge storm came in and basically washed that out. And we thought, oh, how are we going to get down to the hall for the dinner? And then right on cue, the rain stopped, the sun came out, the sun on the puddles made steam rise all the way from on all the streets from home down to the hall. So we fired up the street band, which is one of my projects, and everybody joined in, and 100 people walked down the hall to music with steam rising and had a massive party with lots of other music acts in the hall and
fabulous
and great food.
Wow, I'm sort of 20 years off my 60th, but it sounds like I need to start planning now. Thank you so much, Andy. Libby is with us as well. Hi, Libby, you're on the road. Have I got you there, Libby?
Queensland. On my 60th birthday, I went to Queensland because that's all my family are up there, and swam a kilometre because I do that twice a week. And I'm going to be 70 next year. And I pretty much plan the same. I think I'm really lucky. I don't want to be grim about getting older, but recognising that, like, babies die before they're born. Anyone who gets to 70 is doing really, really well.
Wow.
And I could have died a couple of times, but I'm very lucky I live in Australia and had great health care.
Yeah.
And I'm just living my best life. I haven't got quite the energy I had when I was 40, but still swimming twice a week, still walking heaps, still cycling. I live in the bush, so I'm out in nature a lot, having fun with my dogs. A lot of travelling, so it's just great. But I I recognise that.
Yeah, it sounds like a perfect time of life. Libby, thank you. Keep swimming at 1 kilometre, my goodness.
It's great.
Judy Brewer is still with us, started her care farm at 60. We've been asking, what did you do at 60? What was your 60th birthday? 1300 222 774, or text in on 0437 774 774. Judy, what are the plans for your care farm next?
Oh, it's endless care plans. But I was just thinking when Andy said that, I want to tell you what I did on my 60th birthday. One of the projects I had, and I love these conversations, none of the things that have been suggested cost money, let me just say. You know, you're playing music, you're swimming, you're walking in nature. These are things you can do without, you know, having a lot of, you know, capital in the bank or whatever it might be. So it's finding things that are manageable. But I had a wonderful project in preparing for my 60th where I did a playlist for the night of a song from every year of my life. And so I started in 64 with the Kinks, who really got me. That's what kicked it off. And we danced for 5 hours to my playlist down at the Mudgee Hall. And it was just magic. A couple of hundred people, all the neighbours, friends, you know, anyone I could think of, really. But that forming that playlist was as much fun as dancing to it. But and a lot of people then took my playlist home. So, you know, the hardest bit was finding songs from the 2000s because, you know, I sort of cut out at about, you know, 1999. But so that was a nice challenge too. I had to actually listen to other music. I think even Taylor Swift on her special weekend got a mention in there somewhere.
Oh, well, she's the lady of the hour.
She is. I know. I couldn't compete with that when I was listening to you before. But so future plans, again, one of the fun things we're doing here, we've just put a pickleball court in and we've done it ourselves. It's not hard. I've never played, but we're having a fun day Sunday for the neighbours in to kick off spring to try pickleball because we figure that that's going to be a farmer mental health day. We've had quite a few of them where we just bring in the neighbours and say, come and do something you haven't done before and, you know, have a afternoon tea or a drink or whatever it might be. And this one will be pickleball. So I'm looking forward to learning how to play pickleball. I'm told it's a lot easier than other sports, but I'm yet to find out.
Oh, yes. It's really sort of started up in Victoria. I'm seeing it everywhere now. Judy Brewer, thank you so much for joining us. Before you go, a couple of text messages. One says, Judy, Tim would be so proud of you.
And, oh, that's lovely. Thank you.
Yeah. And quite a few wanting to know where they can find the farm. Can you give us some of the contact as
sure.
a website, I'm sure? How
yeah,
do they find you?
Yeah, there's a website. Very easy. The farm, Mudgee one word, .com.au and if you just Google the farm Mudgee, but I need to say it's not a farm open to the public because of insurance, because of biosecurity. You have to make an appointment. We have groups come. We have to actually organise, you know, the visits, so it's not, you know, just turn up and come in the gate. But all that information's on the website. We have an e-news, we have podcasts, we interview interesting people, we have a co-farmer of the month, you know, so yeah, become part of the community, that's great, but just don't turn up at the gate without telling me.
That sounds fair enough. Judy Brewer, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Kirsten. Always a pleasure.
Judy Brewer there up in Mudgee in the northeast of our state and her care farm. We've been asking, what is it like to turn 60? What did you do on your 60th?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Kirsten Diprose.
And on the text line, Linda says, I learnt to play the harp when I turned 60. And Doug in Werribee says, in the year I turned 60, I did a 14,000-foot tandem skydive and got my motorcycle licence. Surely that's not what Taylor Swift will be walking down the aisle in Madison Square, perhaps in New York. To find out more, Professor Ari Perez is with us, a Taylor Swift fan and teacher of the class Taylor Swift Cultural Mirror Ball in the Women and Gender Studies program at a university in the States. Hi, Ari.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat about Taylor's big day.
I'll bet you're very excited about the wedding. How long have you been a Taylor Swift fan?
Oh, man. So the short story is in 2009, I was teaching middle school and some of my students got me onto her. And as soon as I sat down and listened to Fearless, I was hooked. So going on 17 years now.
Perfect. Because your background is in engineering. You're a professor in engineering, but you've just started this whole other cultural studies on Taylor Swift.
Yes, ma'am. So I'm a professor of civil engineering, geotechnical engineering. I do soil mechanics and foundation design mainly. But I am friends with the program director in the Women and Gender Studies program. And after many years of asking for it, she finally gave me a shot to start teaching the Taylor Swift class a couple of years ago. And it's been just awesome.
Oh, that's great. So Swifties come in all forms of all backgrounds, you know. I don't like this assumption that they're all, you know, 15-year-olds or 20-year-olds. We can all walks of life, Taylor Swift seems to appeal to. And this wedding has been tightly held and all of a sudden it looks like it's happening. What's the latest? What do we know about where and when and how?
Yeah, so reportedly the rehearsal dinner is happening right now with about 100 to 150 people is what I've heard in Madison Square Garden. I was looking at like the tweets and there have been a lot of movement of people coming in and no confirmation whether it is what everybody thinks it is, but something is happening.
Why has it been so top secret?
You know, I think there's a lot of reasons for that, but I think the easiest one to think of is Taylor herself has talked about this, about how when you're a public performer, you know, part of your life is out there in the public sphere. And that's how, that's one of the choices you make. And, you know, on a very different scale, there is a public side to teaching. So I understand that. But part of it, you know, it's personal and private and you get to keep that secret. And I think Taylor has been very deliberate and kind of very open about what parts she considers are for her and for her family and that she needs to keep closer to the vest, just, you know, to be happy with her life. And I think she really thinks of her big wedding as one of those things that she appreciates the well wishes and, you know, what that people are excited for it, but that she really feels it's best to keep it close to the vest with her family and friends.
It's a tricky one, though, because Taylor Swift is a cultural icon and there's all this speculation about the dress and the, you know, where the wedding is going to be. And that's why it is so important, because I know there's speculation here that maybe could an Australian designer have the dress, or, you know, how's this going to influence food and fashion? It's broader than just her romantic moment, even though that might be nice for her. It's bigger than that.
Oh, 100%. You know, like when you think about the economics, just the slightest affiliation with Taylor Swift can really mean a huge difference for an artist, a designer, you know, somebody who caters the wedding. Like that can be a boon for their business. Sometimes people will identify a piece of clothing that Taylor is wearing at an event and within a half hour it's sold out. So I do think there's a lot of it. And I think I feel for her. It's tough, right? Because obviously, part of why she's able to do this big wedding and to live her dream is because of the support of people like me. But there is a line where I think people in the past have felt really entitled to details that she feels are private. I don't know. I think it's complicated. I think she's thought a lot about it. And I think she's got a great PR person that, you know, she has really a good, deliberate plan. I will be honest, even though they're having the rehearsal dinner right now, I still think there's a big shoe to drop, something we haven't found out yet. But that's part of the game, I think.
I've heard rumors that she might have already been married. Is that true?
I mean, I have no way of knowing, but that really wouldn't surprise me. You know, I think all this time I've been thinking that we were going to find out 5 weeks after it happened in an Instagram post that she feels she wants to share the news with the public, but that it is up to her. And so she's going to live in her bubble and then to say and then reveal it. And maybe that's it. Maybe they did get married 6 weeks ago and this is the big blowout bash, but she's already had her day and she's had a chance to like live in her cocoon for 6 weeks. You know, one of the themes of Folklore and Evermore was wanting to like go back to those days of the pandemic when it was small and private and she could live, you know, the approximation of a real person. I think that's a very common theme for artists. So I think you might be right.
Ari Perez, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Professor Ari Perez there, who teaches a Taylor Swift cultural course at university and a huge Swiftie fan. He has a podcast as well. Speaking of giant bashes, we've been talking about 60ths and love your texts. I turned 60 being stuck overseas when COVID was in full swing. So that was great fun. Another says, I'm 83 and I can't remember my 60th now. I hope that's just because you had such a great time. Lots of text messages. Let's go to the phone lines, though, and Janine is in Bendigo. Hi, Janine.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What was your 60th like?
Well, it was wonderful because apart from having a barbecue for my 21st, I'd never celebrated any other birthdays, and often they're alone. So my youngest son, who's 30, organised it all. He asked me if I wanted it because he needed to know who to invite. But he organised a weekend away at an Airbnb in Clifton Springs because he knows I love the coast. And we had my three sons, their three partners, and about four of my best friends and a cousin. And the thing was, though, that Liam and his fiance were overseas for 6 months, and he organised the whole thing while he was overseas on his holiday.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. Sounds like a beautiful way to turn 60. Thank you so much for all your calls and texts. We are running out of time, but Brian Nankervis is coming up next with the Friday Review. That's it for me. Thank you for having me this week. I'll be back on Monday.